We all dream of the fairy tale ending, and with Basha Briggs' upbringing, she always hoped this would happen. Basha was born into gracious living, an old-fashioned aristocrat world of manners, balls, and formal events. Little did she know, but she would end up on the other side of a world, trapped in an alcoholic, abusive marriage, relying totally on herself. This is a story of self-reliance and guts. It's a true story, and I'm sitting here in the splendour of her gorgeous home in Chelsea, surrounded by antiques, the height of glamour and luxury, with gorgeous Basha Briggs, who's written a memoir, Mother Anguish. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So can you tell us about your background first? Who were your parents?
Right. Polish parentage, both mother and father Polish. My mother came from a theatrical family. My father was a vast landowning aristocratic family. A complete disaster. They should never have met or mated.
Okay, so
what he said.
Okay, so did they meet a mate in the UK then?
Blimey, I wasn't there. I don't know.
Okay. But they'd left Poland because of the World War II, haven't they?
Yes, yeah. So they had their entire schooling in Germany.
Born in England?
Yeah. I was born in England, yeah, yes, in the old Brompton Road.
Okay.
It's a little hospital right next to the cemetery.
So how quickly did they divorce then?
I don't think they got on. They divorced when I was very young. I don't know the exact date.
So you don't remember living with your dad?
I have no recollection of seeing my parents in the same room together at any time.
Okay. So your dad was very dashing and handsome. I've seen the photograph in the book.
Yes, he was beautiful, wasn't he? A remarkably handsome man.
Tell us about him.
I don't know what to say. He was very, very formal.
Did he kiss your hand?
Not mine, no, he kissed the hand of older women. And regarding myself, when it came to kissing, there was none of the Polish people are very, very formal. None of this huggy, modern nonsense. Well, it's not really nonsense, it's nice, but a lot of people are sort of promiscuous huggers these days, have you noticed? Everybody hugs everybody. And so in my childhood, some people complained that they were never hugged. Well, I was never hugged, but I would have been cringe-makingly embarrassed if I had been, because I treated my father with great respect from a distance. And whenever he met me after school or whenever he would sort of bend over, because, of course, I was short, being little, and point to his cheek and say, "You may kiss me here."
Oh.
And then, of course, I did, with respect.
But we had a problem, but your mother was always dissing him, wasn't she? Always putting him down to you and actively didn't want you to see him.
Yes, she did her best to freeze him out. She loathed him, she hated him. He, I don't know the details.
For no reason, really?
Well, when I was very young, I've got no reason. But then she kept going on afterwards about him having an affair with some woman called Kitty, amongst others.
Mm, mm.
But he was, as I said, remarkably handsome, and so the women flocked around him.
Yes.
I don't really know what went wrong between the two of them, because, you know, she was beautiful, he was handsome, it should have been all right. I don't know what happened.
And can you tell us, you say she was beautiful, how old was she when she had you?
20.
Wow, so you were very close in age, and she was very glamorous as well.
Yeah, she was, and she, apart from, she wasn't sort of, I don't think, classically beautiful, though, yes, she was. She had a beautiful nose, beautiful teeth, and then so did my dad. Oh, I've got a good nose too.
Looking at your teeth now.
Yeah, well, don't look at my teeth, look at my nose. No bumps there. What are they going to say?
It just didn't
work out. Mm. And she loathed my father with a passion because he left her, presumably. And women, women scorned and all that.
So your mother was a single parent mother, but you had an idyllic time down in the country house in Surrey. Who lived there?
Yes, so although I was born in London, it is the Polish way to palm your children off onto your grannies. It's the European way. And I didn't complain because I knew no different. And my father's parents lived in Farnham in Surrey, in a beautiful house called Lordy Place, which has now been knocked down. Which is tragic, and it's the whole, there are many acres, but it's a little suburb now, a dormitory suburb. But it was a fine house with tennis courts and lakes and trees and woods, and it was nice, it was lovely. And so I was quite happy to be dumped there. I was aware from a very early age that I was a great burden to my mother.
Right, so she made you feel like you're a burden to her. Did you,
no, I just
so did you get in the way of her social life, do you think?
Well, there wasn't much of a social life in Farnham. Well, when I was little, I just took it for granted that... Because the house was full of, as I said, grandparents and aunts, and it was a large house and every room had to be lived in. So I ran amok and I was quite content. And then every so often my mother would turn up looking glamorous and... because she'd spent her time in London.
Were you close to her, or was she, like, glamorous from a distance?
Glamorous from a distance, absolutely a daughter. I mean, all I could think about was when Mum was going to come and visit me. Mm. It was, no, I didn't suffer or anything. You know, so the grandparents were nice. My mother used to turn up every so often smelling delicious, so she was nice, and my father would turn up. I was very confused, but everything was fine. You know, sometimes they were there, sometimes they weren't, but I never... cried or anything.
Sounds quite an eccentric house, because it was full of sort of like, yeah, as you say, byproducts of World War II, sort of old army pilots and things like that. And
yes.
Old generals wandering around with one leg.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you explain more?
Well, my grandfather was a general, and so he that age group, all their acquaintance was all sort of old war people. And all they talked about was the war, and I didn't pay any attention whatsoever, much to my regret, because now I wish I'd listened, but I didn't, and now I don't know enough. And gradually, of course, they all died off, and my grandmother, of course, she was in Ravensbrück concentration camp because she took part in the Warsaw Uprising. She's fascinating. She lasted for 8 months in Ravensbrück, which, you know, I've seen... I bought a book about it recently just to sort of see that another woman inmate had written, just to see what my grandmother went through. But I wasn't ever allowed to ask her about it, and I didn't particularly...
Well, you didn't understand what the idea was then. You didn't understand how big it was, the theory, you know, what she was going through.
It was beyond the bounds of my comprehension.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you think about our life these days, I wouldn't have lasted for 5 minutes in a place like that, so... She got very bad typhoid or dysentery or something. She had stomach problems for the rest of her life, and I think they all got scurvy and their teeth fell out. You know, there are not many vitamins there. You know.
No. Terrible. Can you tell us about your grandfather? He seemed to be a big influence.
Yes. What shall I say? He was very kind, so he was the one that took me to school on the first day. He's like, you know, and he told me I've got to behave myself or I get locked in a dungeon. And he meant well, because he sort of said it with a smile on his face, but nevertheless, they sent me to day school without teaching me any English, so I cried bitterly. Because I didn't know when I was going home, and I didn't know where the lavatory was, and I didn't know anything. They made me sit in the first row in the class, and every time the teacher turned around to write something on the blackboard, I'd make a dash for the door and try and escape to get home. Because I didn't quite understand. But I think at that age, you know, you're
How old were you, five?
Four. But you learn fast at that age.
What about, because you were a child of immigrants and you were speaking Polish, do you think, did that kind of have an effect on your confidence? I mean, did people say, ooh, she's Polish? You know,
oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. Yes, they used to call me a refugee child, and of course I wasn't, because I was blinking well born here, so I was very cross. I was very irritated by it. I had that throughout my entire life. I still do get it, actually. Like now, there's this huge influx of Polish people in England. Whereas when I was a child, there were very few. I'd never heard the Polish language spoken anywhere apart. It was a home language, only spoken by the family. If I'd heard it in the street, I would have done a double take and fainted. You know, whereas now, you go out and there's people gabbling Polish all over the place. So I still get, to a certain extent, a bit of racism now. People find out I'm Polish, and I've got to explain that my father was not a plumber. You know, so...
Although they are brilliant plumbers. My Polish builders came round tomorrow. I love Emil. Yeah.
And I've got a Polish cleaning woman, and I must admit, she's like a white tornado. She can achieve in an hour what it would take me in 2 days.
I never want the Polish to go back. I love them. So can you tell us, your mother wanted you all to herself, and she did not like your relationship with your father, But your happy world came crumbling down when you were sent to boarding school.
Yes, they decided to lock me up because I went for a long walk one day and was missing for some hours. But I misjudged the distance because I was only five. And they thought it would be better if I... because I just sort of run wild.
And they found a nunnery in North London.
They did. It was awful. You must look it up on the Google and you'll see the building. It's a real institution. Very cold, very Spartan, freezing corridors, iron bedsteads, cold dormitories.
And horrible nuns.
Horrible nuns. Mm. I have a loathing for the Catholic Church, I don't mind saying. Mm. It's the most corrupt organisation. And these nuns, the amount of people that have been damaged irreparably by being mistreated by Catholic nuns from an early age, it's really, really screws you up. I don't know whether you've seen that film, The Magdalene Sisters, or anything like that. Have you seen that?
No, I want to see it.
Watch it. Sounds good. It's all about slightly older girls being in a Catholic laundry. It was run under exactly the same principles. And how the nuns behaved in that film is exactly how everything was a sin. You had your ears boxed all the time, which is sort of roughly translated as beaten about the head. They just punished you all the time. The Catholic Church is based on... What are you? Are you any... What religion
just
are you?
Nothing.
Do you know anything about Catholicism?
Well, I just know it's based on guilt. Yeah.
Not only guilt, but prayer, punishment, penance, death, constant sacrifice. More and more sacrifice. So we were not fed properly because if we wanted second helpings, that was greed. And, the very fact that we were little children, we were supposed to be growing.
Yeah, in the book you said that you had, like, boils, sores.
Oh, everybody. Not just me. All of us. We were covered in... Goodness knows why.
Mm. Because you were undernourished, yeah.
Yes. We all had boils and cracks at the side of our mouths and terrible styes on our eyes and... We just sprouted boils.
What happened when you went home and told your mother about it?
You'd think she would have made some complaint or something. I think she was just so self-absorbed and self-obsessed. She always said to me not to give her any trouble. Yeah, she always said, don't cause me any trouble, don't cause me any shame.
God, which was the two things she was giving you. Now... Your mother had...
And actually, I didn't want to upset her too much because I did love her very much. And and it was such a joy to see her when I did go home from boarding school that I didn't want to have a confrontation.
Bring a downer.
Yeah. You know, it was all sort of happiness and joy, rejoice.
Yeah.
So it's like the later school I went to where I got chilblains, which is like frostbite. People don't know anything about chilblains these days. Have you ever had a chilblain?
I think we got them at our school, yeah.
Because there's different stages, you know, they can get sort of pink and itchy. And then you get a further stage where they go purple and the blood sort of pulls like a big plum.
Oh.
And so when I pulled my sock off, you know, half my little toe came off with it. You could see the bone. Yeah, so for an expensive boarding school, you don't expect that level of...
abuse, really. Yeah,
you know, heating was not allowed. It was all to prove how much we love Jesus.
Yeah,
because Jesus suffered on the cross, therefore we've got to suffer in this life. It's really sick.
Well, and you did say in the book that you're lucky. You think that the good thing is it didn't affect you, but you do know girls now that are affected. Some old girls.
What, from my particular school, or generally from all?
No, your school. You said
yes. The Daily Mail did an article about. In 2015, I think, about how boarding schools destroy people's peace of mind in later life. And the school that I went to that was mentioned by two separate women, both in their 50s. So I read it with great interest.
Exactly. So your mother was very glamorous. She loved attention. She had men in her life. She had two particular boyfriends that you became particularly attached to.
Yes,
can you tell us about them?
Yeah, so one worked at the Foreign Office. My mother was young, but she always went for older men. I'm not sure why. He was late mid-50s, a widower. A very civilised man, actually. He used to go and visit his wife's grave in Brompton Cemetery every Saturday, and I used to toddle along with him and help him with a watering can for flowers and things. And I He took a great interest in my education and helped me with my Latin and bought me stamp albums and did all sorts of nice things for me. He died. He died on Christmas Eve just as we were coming for dinner, which knocked the stuffing out of me a bit. And then he ended up by being buried in the same grave as his first wife, okay, who had died mysteriously. I'm not quite sure why. Mm. But anyway, I think the idea of a ready-made family quite appealed to him. He fell in love with my mother, and she had me, and he thought I was nice, and I thought he was nice, and we all got on very well.
And what about the other one?
And the other one, he had an antique furniture shop in South Kensington, and the two men were friends, and I adored him also. It was all one big, jolly, happy... it was just a happy life.
Sounds
they were all
wonderful.
Full of... Yes, they were both... None of this childhood sexual abuse. I remember sort of... I read somewhere that if an elderly single man shows an interest in a young girl child, it's always suspicious. One moment, please. That's my phone ringing.
Okay.
I'll kill this person.
Yeah. Okay, the phone's going. As you can hear, it's a nice...
Hello?
It's going, but we'll be going back to the interview in a minute.
I'll speak to you later.
Okay.
Forgive me, I'm just in the middle of doing a radio interview. Okay, I'll ring you back.
It's coming. Don't go, Radio Gorgeous listeners. Basha is back. So, as you said, tragedy struck because they both died.
Yes, so one died on Christmas Eve and... what was I going to say? That's right, I was reading an article that when an elderly man sometimes shows an interest in a girl child, it's always suspicious. But it's not true. Some older men are wonderfully good with little children.
Yes.
And also they like to mould the character of a small child and teach them things. It's the men that teach... children things. The women tend to just take you shopping.
Yes. Or teach how to cook
or something. Yeah. But when it comes to anything academic, it's the men that teach you.
Marvellous.
People should actually think about that. Because not all men are rampant sexual abusers.
I totally agree with you.
You know, we shouldn't look upon them with a dodgy eye.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So he died, and then 6 months later, the other one, who I also love very much, he had a heart attack and he died. This is the Polish diet has got a lot to answer. The people eat a lot of fatty sausage, you know, and men get to 50, 60 and they drop like flies. So he died. And all this time, my mother was being not stalked but admired from a distance by a very sinister man. No humour in him, no intellect. Well, I don't know if he had much intellect because I don't know. He was odd. But he'd had his eye on her for a while, and he seized his chance when my mother was vulnerable and moved in on her and persuaded her to marry him. I was only 12, so...
His name was Stefan.
Stefan, yes. Mm. He was also Polish. Mm. He was the richest Polish man in England because he'd never been in the war because he had flat feet. Had flat feet and a hernia, and he was very short-sighted, and something else he had, I think, a heart murmur. And
was he in property? Is that
yes,
how he made his
yes.
Name?
So that's what I was told. Mm. That during the war he was buying up property around London because nobody could get insurance, of course, with bombs dropping. So you know, some houses got flattened, but those that didn't were worth a lot of money.
So you went to go and live with him, but it was a very unusual arrangement because your mother was always scared that you were in the way, you know, that you would upset Stefan.
Yes.
And Stefan didn't want you around. So tell us your entrance to the house and where you were living in the house.
Yeah, my mother, she told me that she'd married him. She just sent me a letter to school, which was a terrible shock for me because boarding school, you live for the Daily Post, which is a great treat. And I just got this printed notification that the marriage had taken place on such and such a, you know. I took it very badly because I had seen him once before and he was dour and sour and ugly and old and, you know, not. And I was still grieving for the other two. But my mother didn't explain it. So I was horrified that she'd got married without telling me. I felt I should have been there. But that was just typical of her silly behaviour. But I wasn't going to give her a bad time about it because I just loved my mother. And then I was sent a map as to how to get to our new home, which was in Elveston Place, just off Queen's Gate. So I went there at the end of the school term for the holidays. And I was told to use the tradesman's entrance to start with, so that because he was very jealous, she explained to me, and she didn't want him to have any reminders that she'd been to bed with another man. So, and I was a bit miffed. I was a bit insulted, because it's not as though I was a bastard child or anything, you know. So my parents were lawfully wedded, and my father was nothing to be ashamed of, and I was quite happy living where I was living before. So all of a sudden, my mother marries this bloke, and I've got to move to a new house. Admittedly, it was bigger, but, you know, I was supposed to stay at the top of the house like Mrs. Rochester, really, and never, ever to come into the kitchen, never, ever be seen. And I had a separate entrance.
It's just awful.
Is
it's
it?
Really
Although,
sad.
Really, I had a big room to myself, and all of Mr. Katsonski's furniture, because when he died, he left everything to my mother. Because Stefan had, of course, had this big home, which is full of his own furniture, because that's where he'd lived with his previous wife, who had also died. So he really didn't need a heap more furniture. And I think out of sentiment, my mother didn't want to get rid of Mr. Kasansky's furniture. So that was all piled into my room, which is a big room, but it looked like a junk shop, or a furniture shop. But I didn't mind.
Did you see your mother much?
It was so strange, actually, because she was... I didn't see her. She used to bring my food up to my room. Well, no, I was a full boarder.
Mm-hmm. So weekends you were back? Yeah.
No, I was
not
full
weekends,
boarder.
Sorry. I mean, only holidays, because you didn't have half terms and exits.
Yeah, the odd half term and holidays, of course, at which time she used to bring my food up to me on a plate, on the tray. But look, I had a big room, I had a television, you know, and my mother cooked lovely food, so I was quite happy to sit there. I didn't really want to sit and eat with them. Her girlfriends were horrified. They used to sort of say, you know, you take me, you take my child, and we all eat together, that type of thing. But he didn't want to see me, and I didn't particularly want to see him. And so,
did you ever feel lonely?
Don't know. He just got on with life.
Mm.
I was very fortunate that I had a television to myself.
Yeah, you know, in those days, not many people had television.
Big room, you know, a bit overcrowded with furniture, but I didn't mind. You know, it was like I had three desks in it and four cupboards. but, you know, I was comfortable.
Now, your mother was not normal in the way socially and social norms and situations. She had an obsession with the size of men's willies.
Goodness knows, yes, from an early age. It's so embarrassing, it really is, but I just wrote the book the way it happened. She was always talking about my father's penis. Mm. I just don't know why. So from a very early age, whenever she spoke about my father, she'd hold up her little finger and say, he's only got one this big.
Did you know what he was talking
about? No idea at all. No idea. Her eyes would glitter with sort of vindictiveness and fury. And she'd, you know, it was very strange, the look on her face when she'd hold up her hand and she'd got this big... So, and then later on she'd... So I realised that Mr. Henrik was her lover.
Mm-hmm.
And also Mr. Kostansky was her lover, goodness knows how many others, because she'd occasionally speak about somebody and say, I thought she was a respectable woman, but obviously she wasn't. Oh dear, one has to laugh, I think. She'd sometimes say to me things like, oh, now this one's got a bigger one than that one, but I thought she was talking about their cars or something. Yeah. I didn't know she was talking about willies. And having no brothers or cousins or anything, I had no idea what willies looked like. And my father was very dignified. I never once saw him undressed, or my grandfather.
Probably that's a really good thing. So you didn't know what's happening, so it wasn't, didn't affect you.
Didn't know what she was on about. Didn't know what she was on about.
Yeah.
But eventually it dawned on me.
Now, you were 12 when you moved into Elveston Place. But then, obviously, this is the verge of growing up. And around 14, you met a kind of rather wild girl who kind of launched you into the social scene.
Yeah, she was heaps older than me. She was about 8 years older than me. And she had a dreadful reputation.
Just the sort of friend you want, actually.
Yeah, I was walking along High Street, Kensington, feeling really, really lonely on the first day of my Christmas holidays. Mm. Didn't know a soul because boarding school children often have friends scattered.
And they live all over. Yeah.
They live scattered all over the place. It's not like going to a local school. And I just saw her, and I'd recognised her because I'd observed her from before, being a sort of observant child full of... Polish children are very polite, so when they're in company, they're sort of full of secret thoughts and silent observations, if you know what I mean. I used to see this girl walking around with her mother, and her mother was really slutty and vulgar and a cabaret singer, and this girl called Olga, she was really, really slutty and vulgar, and but very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
So rather thrilling,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so when she'd just been stood up by somebody. She was sitting on the steps at Barker's in High Street, Kensington, and I was just wandering, and I saw her, and I said, oh, you know, hello, you know, is that you? And she said, yes. And then she says, keep me company, I've been stood up. And so I said, yes, of course, I had nothing better to do. And then she asked me if I had any... She found out that it had just been my birthday, so she said, well, I'll buy you some makeup. So I thought, yeah, fabulous, you know, nodding again, you know, enthusiastically. And then we had a coffee, and then she asked me about whether I had any boyfriends, and she was talking about her boyfriends and how they buy her expensive presents, and oh, it was very thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said that she's meeting a couple of other men at 5 o'clock, and would I like to come with her? And of course I said yes, which I did, and they were nice, and I lied about my age pretending I was heaps older, but I must have got away with it.
Yes,
sort of,
yes, because they were 22, weren't
yeah 23 ish
yeah,
23-ish, 24-ish, law students.
But what's lovely is you went out with these boys at this age, but none of them tried to take your virginity, did they?
They used to talk about it a lot. Because we used to go to Queen's Club on a Saturday afternoon, and it was funny, sort of after the boys finished playing, we'd sit around in the lounge having a drink, and they tease one, you know, they tease the girls that were determined to remain virgins, you know, that is not natural. But it was all very good-humoured banter. Of course, Olga wasn't included in this because she'd lost her virginity a long time ago. She was very, very, how should we say, accommodating. She was very, very friendly to all. And she was much, how should I put it, derided.
Which is sad, really, because I think, you know, if a man's a stud, you know, they're known as like, oh my gosh, they sleep with so many girls, they're cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet if a girl is enthusiastic about going to bed with people, people look down on her, which I don't think they should. Why not enjoy sex and have lots of relationships?
Because it's something to do with a woman, really. It's the fastidiousness. It's like when you think about, as my father explained to me, it's like a... Hang on a minute. What did he say to me? It's like a burglar. A burglar will go into any old house to burgle. Hang on a minute. But who you invite into your own house, being a woman's vagina,
yeah.
You know, you're very fussy.
Yeah.
But you're not fussy about whose house you burgle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you've got to... And my father did say to me, men want sex and they want it for free, and don't give it to them.
No, he's absolutely right. So you didn't give it to them, but you had this idea in the back of your head, I think when you were about, when you got older, that you wanted to lose your virginity, but because you were in a certain kind of upper class circle, if you did it with someone, then everyone would know, and it would be bad for your image.
It would.
So what was your idea then, what you should do?
Well, I thought, so I got so fed up with everybody talking about it, I thought I'd give it a try. And so I went to Spain on a holiday by myself.
How old were you?
17 and a half. But my mother didn't stop me or anything. She made no... she wasn't concerned about my comings or goings or anything. Well, it was from a very early childhood I could run the streets of London. You know,
which was unusual for those times.
Was it? I don't know. I didn't know any different. She just said if I wanted to cross the road when I was a small child, I had to ask an adult to see me across the road.
So you carried on like that?
Yeah, sometimes.
Asking someone to go. So you got to Spain.
I went to Spain with the sole purpose of losing my virginity to somebody suitable so I could just see what all the fuss was about and then come back to London. And I did meet an Australian guy who was very handsome, and
how much older was he than you?
12 years, nearly 12 years.
Wow. Big age gap, yeah. So he was very handsome.
Yeah, but at the time when I was 17, he was 29, so he wasn't. Mm. He was under 30. He wasn't old.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, looking back, he wasn't old.
He was just a kid.
At the time, though, you must have thought he was very grown up. But also, you'd seen your mother going out with older people, so
yes,
you probably thought that was normal.
Yes, and he was a surfer, and he was always climbing palm trees. He behaved in a very youthful, childish way. I was very impressed at the fact that he'd climbed every palm tree he saw. But then again, so does a monkey, doesn't it? Why? Doesn't it? Anyway, so yes, I bonked him. Goodness knows why.
So his name was Graham.
His name was Graham.
Graham, this changed your life completely because you ended up going back to Australia with him. And I want to know why you did that.
Do I have to go into all the details of this ghastly abortion?
Oh.
No. What?
Okay. So it was down to you were pregnant. Yeah.
Yes.
But then the pregnancy didn't happen. You didn't. Yeah. Okay.
Didn't continue.
Yeah. Didn't continue with it.
Yeah. So that was terminated. It was very botched. It all went hideously wrong. But I was then a little bit. Olga, meanwhile, had gossiped to everybody about it because I told her in strict secrecy because she was older than me. And she wasn't to tell anyone, but that's the thing with secrets, you know, mustn't tell anybody any secrets, you know, because... Mm. And before I knew it, everybody knew about my misfortune, and I felt so mortified and embarrassed and humiliated. I thought, I'm never going to get anybody halfway decent to marry me now, because people don't like girls of the past. You've got to be pure, like Princess Diana.
Was she around at the time?
No. I remember how she said, she always used to say,
that's why they wanted, keep herself wanted tidy. Her,
She herself said she kept herself tidy. So I kept myself tidy also, I thought, with the little lapse. I thought I was so careful. I don't know what happened anyway. I got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that was... But when that pregnancy was terminated, I felt very bad and guilty and... It was an operation that went wrong, and I thought then that perhaps my insides were irreparably damaged. And so as soon as that pregnancy finished, my only thought was to see if I could have a baby. I wanted a baby more than anything, which doesn't make any sense now, but I was only a kid.
So you went back to Australia with Michael, Graham, sorry.
He went first and then I followed.
Okay, so what was your first impressions of Australia when...
They were not good.
Okay. When is this? Early
70s.
Yeah.
They were not good.
Mm.
They were not good because Australia is a vast wasteland, a great sprawling suburban. I know people see it advertised and that, you know, see the Sydney Opera House and you see darling little koala bears up trees and kangaroos hopping about and people frolicking on the beach having a wonderful time, but the reality, and that is like that, and you're welcome to go to the beach so long as you survive the shocks, but the reality is, you know, masses, millions of flies, spiders, scorpions, snakes, and also a cultural wasteland of uneducated people.
So you ended up in Melbourne, where he was from.
Yes.
And you went to go and stay with his parents.
I did, yes.
Tell us about them.
They lived in a funny little cottage, four rooms, two rooms on each side, so front door in the middle. Walk in to the left, there was sitting room, dining room with an interconnecting door, which was always shut, which they never used the sitting room because they never had any visitors.
And the posh room they didn't use.
That's right. And then the dining room, which they used all the time, which is also small, but they had a television in it. But they were uneducated people. All they did was watch Star Trek.
And ate the same meal every day, I found that bizarre.
I know. It tasted very nice. Roast lamb, roast pumpkin, potatoes and peas, lovely gravy. So my mother-in-law, because I married Graham, her name was Effie. She had blue hair and went to the hairdressers every Friday for a wash and set, and then it was lacquered and backcombed and lacquered into a bright blue helmet, and it would stay like that till the following Friday. She'd sleep with a little net on.
I think the thing that disturbed you most about these people when you met them was that they were so uncultured and they weren't interested in anything outside Melbourne, and they'd never been outside Melbourne.
No, Melbourne. Effie and her husband, his name was Garnet, they had met in primary school in a suburb called East Malvern, which is sort of the third poshest suburb in Melbourne. So if you can,
third poshest, I'm impressed.
Third poshest, yes. The poshest suburb is Toorak, which is amazingly beautiful, I have to admit. Glorious mansions nestling in acres of glorious gardens, but I never met anybody in Toorak. And having come from the good life in Knightsbridge, I felt very cheated that I had entered Melbourne by the back door, so to speak, and I was with these incredibly boring people in East Malvern, which was pokey little houses with pokey little gardens, and Graham's house was right opposite a railway line, and as I said, it had two rooms to the left and two rooms to the right, and that was it.
So how did, when you got back, when you got to Australia, what did Graham's behaviour change?
Well, there was that first party he took me to when I went nicely dressed, in a white lace top and a little white skirt, and he was hideously embarrassed. This is after a few days after I'd arrived, because all the other girls, being Australian, they had long bronzed legs in flip-flops and nicely oiled legs, and they looked very nice. And so but I didn't realise that was the dress code for Melbourne, you know, and me with my stockings and high heels. I was.
Yeah, he looked a bit overdressed.
Yeah, just a bit, but I didn't know. I mean, it was casual white skirt and top, but he said he'd never been so embarrassed in his life. And I thought, you know, how dare he be embarrassed by me? And Effie kept telling him to find himself a nice Australian girl, whatever that's supposed to mean. So I found that insulting. Garnet, the Graham's husband, father, he disapproved of me also and never spoke, and basically I was much disliked.
And that's a horrible feeling.
It is, 12,000 miles from home at that age, and 18 years old, and of course some Graham's friends, they're all more or less his age, mostly married of course, and the only ones that weren't were previous girlfriends of his that had been left on the shelf, so they disliked me also.
Oh.
It was hideous. I was very confused. But then after a while, I didn't really try to make them like me after a while, because I thought, oh, well, I must be hung for a sheep as for a lamb. And I was a bit sullen. I was hideously homesick. I wanted to come home and see my mother desperately.
I was going to say, why didn't you try and escape then?
I did, but I realised that my mother said, I wrote, she wrote three times a week.
Oh,
definitely
nice.
Twice a week. Yes, it was nice, because I didn't have a phone. And I told her that the place is absolutely awful and the people are all morons. Effie and Garner didn't have a single book in the house, not a single book. Didn't believe, you know, reading was boring. Never even read a newspaper.
So they knew nothing about the outside world?
No, they had the radio on. They only turned on the television to watch Star Trek, but they had the radio on. Effie would have it on when she was doing her housework, so, you know, you'd hear the weather forecast, which was hot, hot, hot.
So you got married and you had your first child.
My mother told me that I had to stick it out, because if I came back to London, people would say that I'd gone all that way across the world and got jilted. And so out of just pride, just pure pride, and also a desperate need to have a child to check my insides, that is where I thought, oh, well, OK, I'll marry the guy, which I did. Because I was underage, my mother had to fly out to sign. And
what's underage? Under 21?
Yeah.
So
she signed, and then she attended my wedding and then came back to London.
But she had a lovely time on...
She had a lovely time on board ship and had an affair with the captain, as is her wont, you know. I mean, no man was safe. So she had an affair with the captain, on, you know.
Serial seducer.
Yes. I used to... She's a completely delinquent mother. But that being said, I didn't... You know, I did love her very much.
You know,
and I my heart broke when I...
Anyway,
see her off at the ship.
Yes, every
and
time
she was
you
all
went,
excited because she had a dinner date with the captain that night, and you know, it's very exciting when a ship leaves dock. You know,
especially those days, it was more romantic.
Lots of streamers and funnels tooting and music playing and everything, and she was off and she had her, you know, she was going and I was staying.
Mm-hmm. You were staying.
I was staying.
So you stayed, but the good news is you built a house, didn't you?
Yes, Graham talked me into... well, we couldn't live in a flat forever, because that's not the Australian way. Everybody... It's the Australian way is to... Well, as far as he was concerned and all his friends, you live in a flat for a short time, you buy a block of land and then you build your own house. I would have been very happy to buy an old house in an established suburb with trees around it and a bit of a garden, but he used to refer to that as a second-hand house, and I don't want that. I did want it, really, but he said no, we had to buy a block of land and build a house.
But you designed it in your own terms.
I did, and nobody had anything against that. It's a complete mishmash, but I just sort of copied all the features I'd ever seen from houses I'd admired in my youth. So it gave me something to do.
Yeah.
And I felt quite artistic. So, yes, so down to the last PowerPoint, I designed every square inch of it, and it was built to my specifications. I think the builder, elderly builder, thought I was a bit nuts. I wanted paint windows and, I don't know.
You wanted it to be a bit more British.
Very as British as, you know, apart from being slightly Spanish. With a few arches. But, you know, I had lots of inbuilt bookcases. For example, I'm a very bookish person, and Graham couldn't understand that because he'd never read a book in his life. He was thick. But I didn't realise that when I met him. He was handsome. He was a surfer.
And when you're young, you don't realise people are thick, do you? I don't think. I didn't notice. Not till I sort of got on in the world a bit more. I suddenly met, thought, looking back, thinking, God, they were...
Yeah, because you expect people that are older than you...
Yes, to know everything.
And of course, and his parents, Garnet and Effie, you know, people in their 50s, you expect them, and then they knew nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They'd never read a book either.
Yes, so you had a baby, you built the house.
I did, yes. Built a house, and Graham chose that area himself because he said it was going to be the new Toorak, right? Which it wasn't, he was wrong again. And it was a complete and utter dump. Just a great muddy expanse of wilderness, and we built this house on this muddy pile of nothing. It was very, very, very exposed to the elements, so it was scorchingly hot. And Melbourne summers are really, really hot.
And can you tell us about winters? Because I thought Australia didn't get cold.
It gets blinking freezing. Tasmania is closer to the Antarctic, and you get something called... I've never been to Tasmania, nor do I wish to. But you get people joking about Tasmanian hut fever because it's so close to the Antarctic and it's so cold in the winter, people just can't leave the house. Well, they can, but they don't want to. They just sit there and drink, and then they get Tasmanian hut fever. So I told. Mm-hmm. And Melbourne, of course, is the next, just a little bit up across the Tasman Strait.
Mm-hmm.
That gets a very, very cold winter. It doesn't snow. It's not like a European winter, which is very cold and dry. It's a damp, ghastly cold, gets right into your marrow.
And you said that you couldn't get warm in the house.
Couldn't get warm because it was built on a high vantage point, so it was there's no trees around it, no garden, no windbreak, and it was freezing. And Graham, being parsimonious and stingy, we didn't have carpet, just thin floorboards. And it was built on a slight on stilts.
Mm-hmm.
So underneath there was many 6 feet of just freezing cold air, and we never saw the light. So of course that ground would have been very damp. It was damp and it was freezing.
Oh, sounds like hell.
It was hell, and I had a little 2-bar electric heater which I carried around from room to room. He was so stingy; he didn't want to put in central heating, and I was. Oh, it was just hell.
So you had
and the summers are so hot. Everybody keels over. You know, old people die of heart attacks, and birds fall out of trees, and you can't breathe because of the heat. But that is the Melbourne's.
So it's, you know, terribly extreme.
They say that Melbourne can have 4 seasons in one day. People don't realise, because when you watch Neighbours on television, it's never freezing cold, is it?
No. No.
Mind you, that being said, I've had enough of Melbourne. I don't watch Neighbours. But somebody pointed that out to me recently. I said, well, Melbourne winters are so bitterly cold.
So you had another child there, though, didn't you? You carried on.
That was an accident.
Okay.
Because my mother turned up. When I had child number one, I wrote to my mother to say the child is born, alive and well. It would have been nice, actually, if my mother had flown out for the birth, because I was only very young. You know, I was still under 21. It would have been nice if she'd... I was so relieved that my insides were working and I did conceive.
Yes, true. You know, that was your aim, yeah.
That was my aim. So the first month I tried, I got my period and nearly... I was very, very upset because I thought, yikes, I'm... You know, that's... But the second month I got pregnant. So that was a great cause for rejoicing. And then I had the baby and it would have been nice if my mother had turned up for the birth, but she didn't. Now and when, Graham was furious that I was pregnant, and Effie was furious as well, and so was Garnet, that I'd trapped their precious son because he should have found himself a nice Australian girl.
Now, telephone calls were really expensive. You had to put them in advance and everything. Yeah. And I remember they gave you a kind of telephone kind of call to your mother, but you sort of were a bit disturbed because quite often when you did contact her, you realised that she was beginning to drink.
Yes, slurring. And yes, I haven't seen her for a while, but... She wasn't sober when I got her on the phone. Graham allowed me to have one three-minute phone call for my first wedding anniversary, and I was aware that he and his mother were standing close by because the phone was in her bedroom, and Graham said, "There's a surprise for you in Mum's bedroom." So off I went. Garnet by this time was dead.
Mm-hmm.
He keeled over and had a heart attack. Nothing to do with me.
It was the lamb, too much lamb.
too much of that roast lamb. And it's all that fatty gravy. It tasted nice. She cooked the same every single day.
That's a sign of being unimaginative, you see, isn't it?
But on Saturdays, when she took it easy, everybody had frankfurters.
Okay, so that was the fun day.
That was, sink your frankfurter into some ketchup. That Australian food is actually very funny. You know how they sort of... There's a song, meat pie and tomato sauce, same again for the second course.
Oh, wow.
People not of huge imagination, you know. Mm. I want to apologise to all Australians everywhere. Can I take this opportunity? Because I've met some really charming Australians.
So have I. And whenever I meet fabulous Australians, I always say, "You're so brilliant." And they say, "Yeah, but you should meet the ones back at home."
Yes, the brilliant ones are over here.
Yeah.
The losers are back there drinking.
Yeah.
And drinking.
Exactly.
And
that's what happened to Graham. We've got to now bring in that Graham started drinking heavily, didn't he?
Yes, as did all his friends.
Mm. So it was the norm.
It was.
Mm.
Yes.
And was he...
Beer bellies were the norm.
Oh, God. So did he get abusive towards you?
Very much so. I think we were wretchedly unhappy. I think I don't know. He should have married a nice Australian girl.
Yeah.
Look, I did my
Because you wanted
best.
More, you see.
Yeah, but look, I did my best. I threw myself into married life. I was playing house. I was cooking. I was making my own pastry. And, you know, I did my best. But nothing I did was good enough. I think his mother egged him on constantly by this business of he should have married a nice Australian girl. She was hideously embarrassed that I was Polish. Never heard of Poland. Didn't know where it was. Well, she must have heard about it. We didn't know where it was.
But also, he wasn't faithful to you, was he?
Not in the slightest.
Mm.
It was very much, I think Friday nights always, he'd go out with the boys, and there was the topless massage, topless massage parlours were all the rage in Melbourne then. And so he'd go out drinking and rolling drunk and go, you know, in the early hours of the morning. But then, to be truthful, I'd had enough of him. By then, I was pleased to have the house to myself in the evenings without him ranting and raving and demanding sex, so I could then sit down in peace and quiet and write letters.
And read books. Your solace was books, wasn't it?
Yeah, he'd be furious. He'd fly into a rage every time he saw me with a book.
You said that the library once a week was like your...
Once a month.
Yeah. Once a month?
Once a month.
Gosh, how many books would you get out?
First Wednesday, about six. Mm. First Wednesday of every month, the travelling library would come in a big lorry, and I'd push my pram... You know, chug a log, you know, through the bush, to this big van.
Because at least you could escape in books.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Lovely. Yes.
And whenever I had a chance to go to a shop in the city, which is very rarely, then of course I'd buy a couple of books. But he was very stingy.
What were you reading? Romance or?
I'm a bit of a history geek, so I read a lot of history books, whether it was. straightforward textbooks. You know, Stuart history is my... I know everybody loves the Tudors and the Stuarts. Actually, any history. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Any history.
But then if it's combined with a story like Jean Plaidy or something, then it's quite good because then you learn about history, but by reading a lovely story too. Yeah.
Jean Plaidy was okay, but I preferred Anya Seton.
Okay.
And Elizabeth Jenkins. Excellent. Who wrote about Elizabeth and Leicester, and she wrote good books. And also I loved the Poldark books, of course, about England. And I also threw myself into learning about Australia a bit, about the gold rush and the desperation of the poor people that went there and, you know, looking for gold. I could identify myself with the desperation of people leaving Ireland or wherever and going all that blinking way, you know, to be disappointed and to be homesick, because homesickness, there is no pain like it unless you've experienced it. Mm-hmm. Especially when I spent my entire life homesick like Billy-O at school, you know, yearning for my mother. And then I had 1 year of reasonable happiness when I was, after I left school, before I went to Australia. So I had 1 year actually living as a normal human being in a house. All right, fine, I had to use the tradesman's entrance and I wasn't allowed to make any noise and keep quiet. But at least I was in London, I got a job at Harrods, you know, I went to balls and parties, you know, it was great. But I only had that 1 year. But the rest of my life has been imprisonment. Mm-hmm. And in Australia, I was just so hideously homesick.
Was it a pain
in the chest, but nobody can possibly understand it unless you've been through it.
I'm sure listeners will be able to relate to it.
There's a very there's a very famous painting about some immigrants, some old painting. Who's it by? I can't remember. It's called The Last of England. It shows a family in a boat heading towards a ship, you know, gazing back. Heartbreaking.
Yes, just think, a lot of people left Britain, though. I mean, you know, the States, Australia, Canada.
I can understand people, yes, for the States. Well, Australia was further.
Yes. And you were sent there probably because you'd done something wrong, and you might not have even been guilty, done something like stole a loaf or something.
Yes.
It was horrendous.
It wasn't...
Yeah.
It was the all the petty thieves. Of course, the murderers weren't sent to Australia. But I don't know. Everybody that went to Australia, everybody went there for some sad reason.
Yes.
You know, nobody leaves a happy home. No. Nobody goes to Australia voluntarily.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you've got a happy home or you're flourishing in your own country...
Even though you had your 30 Bob Poms, didn't you, who went out there and hoped. You know, they were like, that was in the 50s, they went out, they could go out there for 30 bob and it took 12 weeks to get there or something. Anyway, we're digressing from your story.
Okay. I was very, very homesick, it hurt like hell.
Yeah.
And Australians are such horrible people that they take, if you mention homesickness, they take it as a direct insult to themselves. Oh. You know, they don't...
Yes, because they have an inferiority complex about the country. I have a friend that went out there recently and they said, oh yeah, I've been to Europe loads of times. All they could say was like, I promise I've been there. You know, it's like, doesn't matter, I still like you as a person. your mother and Stefan then had an absolutely crazy idea to come and live in Australia. Tell me about that.
I have no idea because I wasn't here when they made the decision. All I can say is, as I said, my mother refused to let me come back to England with the baby because she thought that she didn't want everybody to know that she was a grandmother because she was only 40. She thought the screaming baby in the house might upset Stefan. And then possibly, because he was such a drunk, he was possibly an embarrassment to her in London society because he wasn't the essence of charm or anything. And they had this idea of going to live in the sunshine. And so she announced that he's actually not in good health and be dead soon. So in the meantime, they were going to come to Australia and live there when I was desperately trying to get her to send me money so I can come back to London and go to Harrods. You know, I just wanted to go to Harrods or, you know, just Kensington Gardens, something, anything.
But then they came. They did
arrive. I begged her not to come. Mm. I begged her and begged her. I said, homesickness, you'll miss your friends. You'll go crazy.
But you had a pact with her when she arrived. Yes. You said, Mum, you've got to agree that when Stefan dies, we'll go back.
She used to write me letters, and she'd always underline that bit. I promise that as soon as Stefan dies, we'll come back to England.
Mm-hmm.
So now, because I loved my mother, and I thought, well, I didn't realise how pissed she was in those days.
Mm.
One part of me thought, oh, well, because I was so lonely there, because I had no friends or neighbours or family, I thought, well, at least I'll have the joy of seeing my mother every day, not realising at the time that she was going to turn up drunk, and I'd have there wasn't much joy seeing a drunken mother every day. But I didn't know that at the time. But I thought that, oh, maybe, you know, because I loved her, if Stefan is going to only got a year to live at most, she said, possibly about 6 months, I can put up
cope,
with that. And cope, and then we can come back to
it. So what actually happened?
Well, she turned up drunk, and he was drunk, and he hated it from day one, and just stayed in his house drinking and wandering around in a dressing gown all the time. And she was sort of... She became trouble. She grew to hate me. From loving me.
I suppose she became a bitter drunk. Yeah.
Yes, and because she hated Australia herself so much. And actually, their life, one has to have some compassion, because their life would have been hideous over there, because they were, you know, they were used to Knightsbridge and going to Harrods whenever they pleased. And all of a sudden, they were in this wilderness, and there's nothing to do but drink. And of course, I had some acquaintances, I won't say friends, but acquaintances of Graham's. And I had a baby to keep me occupied, but they had absolutely nothing. And also, I could speak English properly, but they couldn't.
Wow, they still couldn't speak
English. Well, they spoke it with an accent. And Australians are so incredibly racist. Mm. I mean, they hated the Italians, they hated the Greeks.
But there's loads of Italians there. There's lots of Greeks there.
Yeah, well, the Italians were called wogs, and the Greeks were called dagos.
Terrible, terrible. I mean...
I've never come across such racism.
Gosh, how upsetting. So,
So Mum and Stefan, speaking English, of course, but with a heavy Polish accent, and being of that age group, you know, they weren't...
The outcasts,
Outcasts, and also drunken outcasts. It didn't help. So, and my mother was losing her looks.
So they both drank like fishes, and Graham did too. You had a baby, you're living in this place. Yes. How the hell did you cope, Basha?
I don't know. I don't know. I used to beg my mother to stop drinking.
Mm.
She
used to dry out occasionally, didn't she? She'd have a dry out.
Yes, every so often I'd arrange for her to be hospitalised, to be dried out. But it was a huge responsibility for me, behaving like her parent, because she was completely out of control. And then she'd actually shout at me. And she'd never shouted at me throughout my entire childhood. She was always delicious and fabulous And then in Australia, she said, oh, it's all my fault that she's there and she's lonely and she's stuck. And I said, but I begged you not to come. I begged you not to come. But there's no reasoning with her.
So because the situation was so bad, this is when you found your mettle. This is when you decided, I'm going to change my life. And you said in the book that you'd been sitting around with a ponytail, hadn't put makeup on for years.
No.
You'd nearly forgotten about what you looked like. And you went out, you bought makeup, you had your hair bleached, you scrubbed up, girl.
And then you went
to a modelling agency.
Yeah, because like in Melbourne in the summer, what with all the mosquitoes, you'd wake up with a fresh crop of mosquito bites on you every day. And so I scratch at my mosquito bites terribly. I mean, my face was a mass of scabs. A mass of it, honestly. It was terrible. And because Graham didn't like any sign of vanity, apart from that, I never went anywhere social, so I just pulled my hair back into an elastic band. So what with a scabby face and... Oh, God, it was just awful.
But you scrubbed up well, and you started to get work.
Yes, because, God took pity on me. The biggest stroke of luck was my husband, Graham, getting arrested for drunken driving. You see, I wasn't to know that this would happen. He got done for drunken driving. The police brought him home one night in the back of a van. looking very pitiful, he was.
So suddenly you were in charge.
Yes, suddenly I was in charge. Yeah. That was the turning point. Mm-hmm. So then he had to appear in court. He lost his driving license for a year, which was absolutely marvellous, because before that, you know, I didn't have any wheels at all, not even a bicycle. And I got my license, I took driving lessons, I got a car, I could go into the city. I thought, I can get myself a job. And I stopped picking my spots. And I got my contact lenses, and I had some highlights put in my hair, and I don't know, as soon as I'd lost my confidence a bit, but, you know, as one would.
So of course.
This had been, you know, four years in Melbourne. And then I went to, Christ, I was terrified. I went to an agency which I found the number of in the telephone directory. Well, I rang the man up first to say whether or not, because I'd been good looking in London before I went to Australia, and then once I'd stopped picking my mosquito bites, I realised I had a complexion. And it's very funny, because these days, if I get anything vaguely resembling a tiny pimple, you know, I'd get fly into hysteria. Mind you, I haven't had a pimple for 10 years. It just doesn't happen. No. But then I was just a mass of scabs. It was so itchy. Mm. You try living down there, it was just awful.
But then you started earning money.
I started earning big money, yes, all of a sudden. Big money, yes.
So your confidence must have...
It rocketed. And my poor mother-in-law and Graham were shell-shocked.
And actually, it's just like a sort of play or a film. Your status went up and theirs went down. Yes. It sort of means it's going to be more drama in a way, because they must have hated it.
Yes. You know? Every time I came on television, all of a sudden I was doing commercials and I was a new face. Although I'd been there for a while, I was a new face. And I've got a very good head for hats. So I did a lot of hat modelling.
And you even got a part in a soap opera.
Yeah, that's right. Only small, but it was a start. They liked my face because I've sort of got very Slavic features. And it was a 1930s soap opera.
Fabulous. Yeah. No, you do look. You look 20s, 30s.
Yeah. Oh, see, they decided I had a 30s look. I thought, I wasn't going to argue. That's fine. I'll do anything. You know, just...
So this is great, because you're getting money to escape.
Yes. I saved every penny. Every penny I saved.
Okay, so you had a plan to go then?
Yes. Mm. Yes, the whole plan was to... To you know, my running away money.
And what was the final crunch that made you go?
Stefan, Graham used to go and get drunk with my mother and Stefan every evening, so they're three drinks together, because I'm not a heavy drinker. I'll have a couple of glasses in a day. I mean,
no, drunks want to be together, because
they do, don't they? Yeah, they do. Yeah. Oh, a load of plonkers. Yeah. Anyway, so Stefan drank himself to death. It was a very, very unpleasant death, actually. People think of, you know, you hear of people drinking themselves to death, and it sounds like quite a sort of...
Romantic, nice way
to go. But reality is bloody awful, actually. Yeah. It's really, really a nasty way to die. And when they rang me from the hospital to say... So Graham let me have a phone in the end. Well, I had money of my own, so I could... afford a phone. He kept me without a phone and without a car to isolate me, thereby being, you know, having power.
This is what controlling men do.
Yes. But without a phone, think about it. Especially when I had a newborn baby. Mm. And what do I know about
dangerous babies?
I'd never even seen a naked baby before I had my own, and I would have liked to have rung up somebody if I had, you know, it's a wonder I didn't.
Yeah, someone even like down the road.
Yes. Yes, there was nobody down the road, no older woman that would have given me advice. I bought a book of instructions, of course, about how to look after babies. So I had a baby in one hand and a book in the other, and I muddled along, you know. And where was I? Lost my
train. You were... what was the final moment that made you leave?
Well, so then Stefan was hospitalised and he died a terrible death, with the details of which are in the book. And then I said to my mother, right... This is after quite some time after they'd been there.
Yeah, how long had they been there, by the way?
3 years. She said he'd be dead in 6 months.
Okay. So it took 3 years for him to die.
Yes. And I said, yeah, she lied.
Yeah.
She said he had a brain tumour and he didn't.
God.
And, you know, he just drank too much. And so actually, one has to have some compassion for the man. All right, fine, he treated me appallingly when I was a girl. But him being... Why he went there, I've got no idea. And why she took him there, he must have been too much of an embarrassment in London. But even so, he had nothing there. Absolutely nothing. No acquaintance of any. Just Graham. So they were...
Buddies,
Drinking buddies. Beer buddies, I think they call them in Australia, except that they drank whiskey and sherry and brandy and everything.
Real alky drinks.
Real, yes, awful. So anyway, and then Stefan died. And then I said to my mother, I've kept my side of the bargain, I've got money, you can sell the house that you bought, we can, even if you stay sober, we can buy a house in London, a decent one, or jointly, or I've got enough money by now to buy a house in Battersea. What was I going to say? So I said,
so you were planning your escape with your mum,
and I kept my side of the bargain. So can we go home now, please? Because I don't want to die out here.
Yeah,
I thought I was going to die out there. It was a big, serious worry. You know, there was no.
Yeah, well, I could see everyone was dying around you, and you were in the middle of nowhere. It's like you've lost yourself. Yeah, you want to go and find
that
it again.
I didn't know Graham's friends. Yeah. They're all drinkers. They're
horrible.
All, you know, the women were drunk and loud, and the men were drunk and loud and hideous and ghastly. And I just had to get away. But as I thought I had a responsibility to my mother, and I couldn't leave while Stefan was still alive. Because he wasn't going to come back to, I don't know, they'd burned their bridges. Anyway, the moment he died, I said, right, we're off. And then she said, I'm not ready to leave yet. And I thought, weird, strange. But anyway, I carried on working a bit longer. And then one day she admitted that she'd been having an affair with my husband, Graham. I mean, honestly, she told me. It was just, talk about...
Was that the worst moment of your life?
Not really, but it was a bit of a kick in the guts. It was a bit of a kick in the guts.
Very hurtful.
You see, I wasn't having sex with him by then. I didn't like him.
You'd withdrawn from him. Yeah.
Totally and utterly. And I didn't...
You didn't respect him, like him, love
nothing,
him.
Nothing. No, not in the slightest. No feeling whatsoever. But it's not the point.
No.
I might have done. You with me for all she knew.
Also, it's respect.
Yes, but, she was a sexual woman, whereas, sex with Graham was enough to put me off sex for life.
had this terrible news. What happened when you confronted Graham?
We were hardly speaking. The last year that I was there, we were living in the same house, but we weren't talking. He could see that I was earning money. He could see that he was losing me. But I don't know what his feelings were, because he could see that I was out of control by then. I was buying clothes, I was zooming around in the car, I was coming and going as I pleased.
A bit more freedom.
Yes, total freedom. And he didn't, whatever he said was quite irrelevant as far as I was concerned. It was sort of no concern to me what he thought.
So how quickly did you decide to buy the flights?
As soon as my mother told me about the affair that they were having, I thought, right, that's it. So I felt that my duty towards her had been discharged honourably. No? And I thought, right, I'm off. So I had two children by now. I booked my plane and ran away.
To the start of a new life.
Yes.
Which has been a joy.
On and off.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you had the problem of the children... The fight between you and Graham, whether she'd live.
I stole Graham's passport so he couldn't follow me to try and get me back. But it's extraordinary how quickly... I still got the passport, you can see it if you want. and now Graham's dead because he drank himself to death.
How soon after that?
Oh, it was nothing to do with me. It was not. It's not. He didn't drink himself to death out of remorse because I died.
He was on the way anyway.
Although he did repent. You know, we both repented our marriage. I wasn't his sort, and he thought I was a stuck-up English bitch, and he whinging.
Probably he brought the worst out in you, you see. You know, because he took you to the place where you're unhappy, you know. I mean,
but I didn't want to go wife-swapping.
No.
All right? I didn't want to go, so it doesn't mean I was a stuck-up pommy bitch because I refused to kiss... I remember
revolting.
There was one man called Ken, and Everybody was snogging at the end of one barbecue one evening, and this everybody was snogging, for God's sake. And I'm not a great one for spit swapping, and I'm not a very tactile person. And we were saying goodnight, and I wanted to go home. And he said, "Why didn't you want to kiss Ken?" I said, "I just didn't. Why should I?" You know, so he said, "Oh, stuck up on me, bitch." I heard this all the time. You know,
the trouble is, if you hear it all the time, it nearly makes you want to be one. You know?
Yeah, well, I was. Yes, fine. Yes, yes, yeah, stuck fine. Up. Yeah. Yes, I was. Yeah. Call me bitch. Okay, fine. I'll live with that. Think what you want. I mean, I held them all in so little regard that I don't care what they thought.
Well, it kept you protected as well and strong. Yeah.
Well, I became a bit despairing. You know, I bit my nails and scratched my spots and tore my hair, but. You know, so things were pretty grim.
So you left, you took your children, but you left Graham and you left your mother.
And I left, yes, and my mother, so I thought, oh, bloody well, you know, you can stay out here if it means so much to you and die with the rest of them. Because Graham didn't drink himself to death because I'd left him, because his brother drank himself to death as well. Now, his brother, I wasn't married to him, you know. So we're talking about Garnet, Effie, they're all dead. And Graham's friends, and Graham, and his brother.
How old was Graham when he died?
And the horse he rode in on.
How old was Graham when he died?
56.
God.
Ridiculous when you think about it.
Yeah, really.
Ridiculous.
Young.
But
really
it's the young. Drink, the drinking and the smoking combined. I think it's very, very destructive to
now, I'm not going to talk too much about your children, but obviously it was quite traumatic for them. Where do they live now? Do they live in Australia or England? And do they see themselves as English, Australian or Polish?
I don't know. They see themselves as a dreadful mess, I think. I did, because if I'd stayed in Australia, they would have grown up ordinary Australian people, which I didn't really want. But it is paradise for tiny little children.
Yes.
It is, because you run around in the sunshine. You've got your little plastic shoes on in case you stand on a snake. But, you know, you've got little plastic gumboots. But it is, you know, the beach is close by, so it is nice for children, but it's not a repository of culture once you grow up a bit.
And everyone wants more, you know, when you get older, you want cinemas, you want concerts, you want galleries.
I didn't go to a cinema once in all the time I was there. Never once went to the cinema.
So are they in Britain, your children?
They come and go. They're both. My son is a huge traveller. He's in. He was here a month ago. Right now, he's wandering around India. He likes wandering around. I think in their extreme childhood, because they had to fly backwards and forwards.
They probably think travelling's normal then.
Yes, but at the same time, we spent a lot of time crying at airports, saying goodbye, and then it was horrible. You're very emotional places, airports. And, you know, I shouldn't have married an Australian. You know, if I married a Frenchman or something, it would have just been a quick hop and a skip, you know, from London. But, you know, it shouldn't be allowed.
And is your daughter married or settled down?
She's taken up with an Israeli man who was her boss at work. I think she's taken up with him because he's not a drinker.
Good. That's wonderful.
I think she was traumatized by all this drunkenness, because when I married my husband, my present husband Dick, who was a rough, tough East Ender, but I married him to protect me from Graham, he was also a very heavy drinker.
I was going to say, why did you do that? You had 3 days in Britain, you met your husband to be, and you could see that he was a wild man and drank a lot. You just escaped from that. Yeah. I mean, I did think, Basha,
so
you're mad. I did think this is crazy.
He was so wild. I mean,
wild fun, you mean?
No, he just looked dangerous. And I just presumed that the other one was going to come after me, and I needed a protector in a hurry. Mm-hmm. I needed one in a hurry. And, you know, and there was this man. I didn't know him. He's a complete stranger, really. Olga had met him in a club. He was a bouncer. Then I was in her flat, and he came calling, and he looked so mean. I thought he was awful. He was so rough, tough, and angry looking. And
but why were you? Well, I know you want to be protected, but you just run away from somebody
like
that.
I needed a bouncer thug to protect me from the Australian.
The other
yes,
bouncer thug.
Who was getting himself a new passport to come after me, which he did do. You know, so although this bouncer thug was living in a basement in Paddington, not exactly the glorious marriage I'd envisaged for myself, He was living in a basement in Paddington with dustbins out the front.
But your friends didn't approve of him.
No, they hated him. So they hated because they couldn't believe that I'd taken up with him. So that caused me much sadness. But I gradually sort of knocked him into shape, I think. I got him sobered up. At least he paid attention and listened. By this time, I'd got my confidence. I'd grown up by then, and I had decided that this interview, for instance, that I'm giving, or the book I wrote, is to give all women hope. You know, that sometimes you can be in the most dire circumstances and be full of despair and, you know, biting your nails and seeing no hope for the future. But there's always hope if you keep your wits about you, if you observe the proprieties, keep your head and look out for any opportunity, you can emerge victorious so long as you don't turn to drink.
Exactly. I just want to point out that Basha has, through her charitable work, she's met the Queen. She's her husband's been awarded gongs from the royal family. She's now got a safe, beautiful life. And thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having
you know,
me.
You, at the beginning, you did say, I don't know what to say.
Yes.
Well, I
and
think you definitely... Exactly.
I prattled and chattered and it's been... It's been a thoroughly difficult life, but one has to. It's difficult to claw your way back up, but if you've got determination, all things are possible.
Thank you so much, Basha Briggs, for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me.
And Mother Anguish, a memoir by Basha Briggs, is published by Quartet. And for even more incredible women, I know you can't believe there are more out there, try radiogorgeous.com where you'll find more. Thank you so much.